Welcome to Conscious Fitness Divine Body, hosted by Aline, and it's myself with my French accent. And today we are going to be exploring the fantastic realm of creativity. And for that, we could not have gone there without the support, help, and vision of Hal Zina Bennett. Hal Zina Bennett always likes to go inward. He's an author of many books and a writing coach whose approach to writing is based upon accessing the deep creative consciousness. Is it what it is, Hal? Hello.
Hello.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Very good. So you're ready to share your vision about creativity with our listeners?
Sure.
Great. I would say that I have personally read The Lens of Perception, actually two versions of it, and Follow Your Bliss, and Write from the Heart, and writing spiritual books as well. And my personal lens of perception about you is I perceive in you someone whose understanding about our true nature reveals a meaningful universal order and a purposeful creative journey. Am I right if I see that within you?
Yeah, I think so. You know,
yeah.
That when we are on our creative path, we're generating our most positive, you know, what we can give to the world,
mm-hmm.
and at the same time fulfilling something very deep in ourselves. So I think it's a really critical
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So Hal, why is it so essential to experience ourselves as creative channels? And actually, who should do it?
Everybody should do it, and I think everybody does do it to some degree. And I think what happens when we don't do it, I mean, like our creativity is literally coming from us. I mean, that's where it's coming from. Well, that and from spirit, But it's the way we both discover ourselves and express really who we are, and it's at one and the same time the most selfish and the most generous thing that we can do, you know,
mm-hmm.
to give ourselves in that way and to give our creativity. And I don't mean like in the sense of being Pablo Picasso or somebody like that,
mm-hmm.
but we all have these different ways that we express our creativity, and finding what that channel is for us, for each of us, is
mm-hmm.
Is very critical, very important.
True. And so it's very interesting because I had a client actually earlier today who has that kind of challenge. She was telling me that, yeah, she knows that she should be expressing herself with this creative side of her that she has probably left out for a long time in her life. But she's like, she said, how do you do it? Is there any practical way to unleash one's creative potential? And then I told her, you got to listen tonight because I'm going to be talking about it with Hal Zina Bennett tonight, and he's the master because he has actually created this practical way to do so. And you do so in one of your book, Right from the Heart, and you talk about those four portals of creative
yeah.
potential. So what are they?
Yeah, well, you know, over the years I've worked with a lot of writers, helping them develop their own creativity, or out and out helping them develop a book or some creative process project, and what I see over and over again is that there's this kind of a illusion that our creativity is somehow outside us, that we have to, you know, kind of be clever and figure out some new thing that's never been done before. And what I've discovered in the most creative people I've worked with, and I've helped, you know, literally hundreds of people write successful books. And what I've discovered without exception is that the people who are most creative really draw from their own life experience. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, we all kind of know that, you know, or we hear that slogan or cliche
all the time.
But we, you know, how do we do that? And so what I began to look at was, or develop was, what I call the four portals of creativity, as you mentioned. And,
mm-hmm.
and essentially they're things like, what do we look for in our lives? Well, we look for the peak experiences in our lives, the times in our lives when there's been a really big charge for us, or, you know, around passionately or emotionally or even intellectually. But what I look for in particular is, the direction of these things is that there are peak experiences, and Abraham Maslow, who was a psychologist in the 60s, who
mm-hmm.
developed that term, and what he meant by that was peak experiences were those really kind of special moments in our lives when we're so totally into what we're doing, you know, that we feel just no separation. And I'm sure that you've had that experience many
mm-hmm.
times where we feel no separation between what we're doing and ourselves. It's like we're just totally in that moment. And those are very powerful moments. Those are moments when we're really in touch with our creativity and with who we are, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's that's one portal, the peak experience. So we look at those kinds of experiences for inspiration in our lives and for real meaning in our lives. And then there are essential wounds. That's the second portal. And essential wounds are those moments in our lives when we discover that the rest of the world doesn't see things exactly as we see them.
Mm-hmm.
And those are things that happen to all of us, and a source of a great deal of grief for most of us when we discover, for example, that someone we deeply love or a friend
mm-hmm.
Reveals through their behavior or something they say that they look at the world in a very, very different way than we do, and it can lead to disappointment or deep hurt, trauma. Anyway, that's the shorthand version of the essential wound. And then there's what I call the mask self, and
mm-hmm.
that's what that has to do with is certain ways that we learn to behave and act in the world where we feel safe, you know. And it's the mask that we present to the world, and we all do this. You know, it's some people call it personality self.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not all. It's not all of who we are, you know. And it's usually things that we've learned how to do that get us positive feedback, but not necessarily
mm-hmm.
Getting us in touch with ourselves.
Yeah.
And then, so that's a portal. And then looking at those kinds of experiences, and then there's the experience of what I call divine inspiration, and those are moments when there's no explanation for some inspiration you receive to do something. But what I, there's this little secret I discovered about that about 10 years ago, and that was that when you start tapping into the other three portals, divine inspiration comes more and more and more in your life. You know, it's like once you turn on the spigot, you know, it flows. Accessing any of that, any experiences around those things starts to get us tapped into real creativity.
And would you call this divine inspiration the same feeling as this feeling of knowingness when you do something?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, I mean, it can really feel... I think that we all are able to access universal knowledge, let's call it, or what C.G. Jung used to call the collective consciousness, or the consciousness of the planet or something, but we're all always kind of just a breath away from accessing that if we're not totally in it at the moment, you know? And when that's working, it's like
right.
Almost like we're riding a wave, you know?
So there's a question that just came to me as well. When did you, were you born with that knowingness? Or, what has happened to you in terms of those experiences of mask self and essential wound that actually brought you that awareness of actually we are something more than what we believe we are, and there's something most likely higher than us, and we need to go and seek it. So what is your path in that?
I've had really kind of a peculiar path. I think very early on in my life, when I was born, I had kind of a strange birth experience in which basically I was not bonded as a child. I don't know if you know that whole thing, but basically abandoned. My mother, for various reasons, was unable to, kind of receive me when I was born. And so I was just sort of almost abandoned in the hospital nursery.
Mm.
And I won't go into the details on that, but a number of very interesting things happened as a result. And one was the woman that I bonded with eventually was a nanny that my parents hired, and she was Cajun and spoke Cajun, which is a combination of four languages. So she and I had a private language until I was about 5 years old, and then they fired her, and I was again abandoned and began to access, I didn't know what it was at the time, but I had some people call them angels, or imaginary playmates, or spirit guides, and accessed them real early in my life. And so my education around spiritual things, I think, started then, because there was a lot of just kind of divinely inspired things, like having this one spirit guide who, when I was 6 years old, telling me all is not what it appears to be. And then I remember that so clearly, and having him giving me instructions for doing things like going out at night, sneaking out of the house at night, and laying under the stars and contemplating where the universe began or ended or did it, you know, like contemplating total, you know, infinity and the endlessness of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, pretty strange stuff for a six-year-old child.
Yeah, definitely.
And so a lot of it was, I mean, I certainly felt I was peculiar, you know,
mm-hmm.
as a child growing up. But over the years, that's, I began, looking back, at least in retrospect, I can see the inspiration for a whole bunch of things like this and how they all kind of come together
mm-hmm.
In a unique tapestry. And
mm-hmm.
I think that it's not, although my background is probably a little unusual, I think we all have kind of tastes of this, that sort of thing too, because if you talk to anybody who's really on a serious spiritual path or personal growth path, they'll have at least had some pretty dramatic moments that are not that different, you know, around tapping into something larger than themselves.
So the fact that you expressed this creativity through writing, how did that come up?
It's just filled with kind of contradictions because as a child, I got interested in writing or in reading very early, and
mm-hmm.
my parents were college-educated people, so there were a lot of books around, and by the time I was in probably, junior high or something like that, I was reading, like classic literature, and the schools that I went to, there was no place for that to fit in, frankly,
mm-hmm.
and they were suburban schools and near Detroit, Michigan, and so I was never able to connect it with school. You know, I was pretty well read, probably better read than most of my teachers by the time I was in junior high school, but I always got bad grades in school, and frankly, I flunked English more than once. The written word was always really very important to me, a very important part of my life, and I always wrote, from a very early age, trying to articulate things that I was experiencing in a way that other people around me would understand them. It was basically that I wanted to be understood, and and I wasn't being understood, and so I was motivated to become more articulate. And but of course, that wasn't always the problem. So writing has been an important part of my life for a long time.
Obviously, yes, and successful too.
Pardon me?
I said the writing is a very important part of your life and successful too.
Yes,
yes it is. So I know that in your books you mention Abraham Maslow a few times, and I found this quote says, "The key question isn't what fosters creativity, but it is why, in God's name, isn't everyone creative?"
Yeah.
So explain, like, if you would have a conversation with him and he would, tell you that, what would you answer him?
It's a big question, I think one of the questions that he was really into was seeing that. On a logical level, when you really begin to understand the creative process, you can't quite understand why everybody doesn't get it from a very early age, because, and I think that there's this, that's what we are. We're all very generative, and we learn to not be. And what fascinated me about Maslow was that he looked not at what was wrong as you know, most psychologists have done, you know, like the pathology of human behavior. But it, what is it that goes on when things are going really, really well? And so he obviously became very involved in the creative process because that is what's going on when things are going very well. And it's, you know, we see these things happen, or, you know, and they happen in our own life where we get stuck in some patterns of security or, you know, ways of being in the world that feel secure and safe for us, but really prevent us from exercising our real generative or creative ability, where we come up with new ideas and new new views of ways of doing things, and not insisting upon a set plan, you know, or getting hung up in any kind of system that where we feel that the system is more important than our creativity.
Totally. And I need just to make a little saying to our listeners that if you have questions and you really want to actually interact with us, and especially with Al, then you're more than welcome to call us on the number, the call-in numbers. I'm going to give you one right there, and it's 877-876-5227. And there's a direct line also, 530-876-3222. So don't hesitate to call if you want to get in touch directly with Al. I'm sure there's a lot of questions out there for people who experience themselves as a writer right now and eventually dream about becoming author, published author, and you know, how to dig in. And it's not only about writing, obviously, because creativity is through everything, but more than welcome to call and converse with us. There's another question that comes to me as well, because we were talking about practical ways to really dig into this creative potential. When I read writing spiritual books, I discovered the mind mapping. So, and it was truly, Al, I have to tell you, it was a mind-blowing for me, because I was able from that tool to come up with another tool that I use with my clients now, but I found it so profound and deeply helpful for me. So can you describe the intention behind that technique?
What was the tool again? The
mind mapping technique that you explaining in the your book, the writing spiritual book.
Yeah.
Say
a little more about it, because I think I've got not the greatest connection here. So say it again.
Do you want to try to call a little to try to speak a little louder, maybe, or do you want me to talk a little bit louder?
Yeah, could you talk a little louder?
Okay. I'm sorry about that. You too. You're probably a little bit. We're far, Texas and California. So I was saying that when I read writing spiritual book, I discovered the technique of the mind mapping, and I was really blown away by how far I was able to go within my process, my thinking process, and intuitive process as well. And I would like you to share with our listeners and myself the intention behind that technique.
Yeah, the technique is a little hard to describe on the radio.
It is.
But essentially it's like a visual way, if you could imagine taking a large sheet of paper and just starting to randomly put your ideas down on the paper, and not worrying too much at first on how you're going to connect them, or arrange them. And so you may go through several sheets of paper, like let's say you're working, I do it when I'm working out an outline for a book. I don't use a regular outline. I may go through 30 or 40 huge sheets of paper, you know, doing this. And mind mapping, what it really does is that the human consciousness is not linear. You know, we don't think linearly, you know. in a straight line, like the old-fashioned way of doing an outline that we learn in school with Roman numerals and stuff. It's very, very confining creatively, and because that's not the way our minds work. Our minds are very holographic. They're three-dimensional. Human consciousness research shows that what we really do is that we create kind of images. They're not always clear, crisp images in our mind, but they have a three-dimensional quality to them. And so the connections that we might make with that are almost unlimited. So we need to have a way that can, in some ways, approximate that the kind of endless connections that our minds are able to make. And the mind mapping comes pretty close to doing that. I would actually like to have like this huge sculpture, you know, that would be three-dimensional in the center of a room, and you'd be able to, it would be more like a tree than a piece of paper, you know. Wouldn't that be cool?
Totally.
And what we're finding is that there's the cutting-edge research in brain research these days is around something called neuroplasticity, and that has to do with the number of, you know, billions of connections that one neuron can trigger in our brains, and that we're not limited by, you know, like it used to be thought that beyond a certain age you didn't think very well, you know, you just got set in patterns. And or let's say somebody has a stroke or a head injury, trauma, certain things, that the brain really can relearn how to do things at virtually any age and with a huge variety of injuries. But the mind mapping is saying, I don't know, I've been reading quite a bit about brain plasticity lately, and the mind map allows us to make a pretty good use of a way of creating organization and order, at least temporary, you know, organization and order. That is coherent and articulate, and that we can, for doing any project, we need to organize our thoughts to some degree. My contention is that the real, the bottom line use of any book or any creative endeavor is to hold people's attention for a period of time, because the way our brains work is that everybody's attention span is pretty short, and that if you're gonna study something very complicated, you've got to have a way of holding the person's attention.
You're right.
For more than a few minutes. And
that's true.
Can do it for hours. A great piece of art can do it for a lifetime. You know? Music. Just about anything. It really has to do with a way of holding our attention.
Okay. That's...
And you might begin to question, is that a good thing or a bad thing?
All right, let's go. Well, the as you say earlier, it is a tool that is a little bit complex to explain because it's so visual that I just want to tell our listeners that if they want to have that visual, they really need to get that book, Writing Spiritual Books, by Alcina Bennett. And it was, for me, very insightful, very powerful, and I have been giving that tool to some of my students, and the same thing, like, I could not imagine how many, in so many ways where my mind could go, and it was just on the paper, and it was a lot more to me, revealing than, like you were saying, classic outlines with one, two, three, four, one underneath the other one. It was just more, it felt as a 3D, like a three-dimensional process, which made me, I guess I felt more in tune with the way I work, I guess. But so really, get writing spiritual books, and if you are thinking about creating a book, or if you have any creative ideas, use that tool. It was really powerful to me.
Yeah,
so
please.
Thank you for that and sharing that with us.
Welcome. I didn't invent that.
But you know what? Most likely you were a good channel for me, that's for sure. But thank you for explaining it, though. If we expand the picture here, I'm going to ask you, if you feel that there's a shift in consciousness that is occurring about our individual and collective search for happiness today, and if there is, can our creative potential support that quest?
You mean, like, universally, is there a change in consciousness?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that there is. And it's, I think what is happening, but you know, Barbara Marx Hubbard, she's a writer and a visionary. She's written a number of books, and she talked about how there would be two extremes of consciousness and energy coming together in our lifetime, and one is the energy of domination of one group of people getting power over another people by exerting force through the use of force, essentially, through force and by fear.
Okay.
So that's one extreme. And the junction of the two is the spiritual and the creative, in which we begin to see that our greatest power is not power over other people, but the ability to bring out the best in each other. And, you know, like, the more each of us is in touch with our own creative and spiritual potential, that's the way the world gets to be a really great place to be.
There, all right.
And so we're seeing this junction, this kind of what do you call it? Like in homeopathy, the exaggeration of the symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
Of our times, and so you're seeing this exaggeration of symptoms of violence throughout the world, of different forces and different people in the world using everything from intimidation to annihilation to get their way.
Yeah.
Annihilation of other people, and it's a very sad and dangerous time. And then on the other hand, we're seeing greater and greater interest universally in the creative and the spiritual processes. Like there's in my profession as a writer and publisher and stuff, I see just more books than ever and more people than ever really getting tapped into spiritual principles,
mm-hmm.
and human development principles that were almost like the private domain of the high priests a few hundred years ago. And at this point, it's like a lot of people are into, millions of people are operating from that place. So I can see it happening,
mm-hmm.
and I sometimes think it's a race to see which position is going to win out. You know?
Yeah.
I'm a pretty optimistic person.
You see, but me too. Me too. I have this trust, I guess, in humanity and where we're going. And somewhere, I hold on to that, but it does, yay, I'm pretty optimistic, too.
Mm.
Where does it come from?
The optimism?
Yeah.
By paying attention, I think. I mean that kind of, I mean it seriously in a way. Some years ago, we moved to this area where we live now, which is in a very rural Northern California area, and what they call pretty redneck area.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to joke, the neighborhood we moved into, somebody asked me to describe it once, and I said, well, you know, I'm kind of surrounded by felons, which is not untrue, you know, that several of my neighbors are ex-felons,
mm-hmm.
and making their way in the world better now.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, at first it was I don't come from that kind of background. You know, it was a little intimidating to me. And then I started having these things happen where a woodcutter, for example, I was buying some firewood for him, and he was unloading it. And we were sitting on the tailgate of his truck.
Mm-hmm.
And he says to me, I mean, this is like a real redneckish guy. And he says,
uh-huh.
He says, Hal, do you think I'm a spiritual man?
Did he?
Yeah. And
oh,
I was
wow.
like blown away by it. And I said, you know, my first reaction was, of course you are if you're asking that question.
Yes.
And he says, you know, sometimes when I'm out in the woods cutting wood, he says, I'll do up a number, meaning
oh.
a little dough. And he says, you know, I talk to God. I really do. But God isn't like a person. God is, and then he started describing this whole sort of animistic vision that he had,
mm-hmm.
and describing these things. And I mean, this is a man who is barely literate. He can barely sign his name,
mm-hmm.
and he's pretty rough customer. You know,
mm-hmm.
he gets into fights and all that kind of thing. But he also has this other side to him.
Yeah.
And I find it really kind of opened my eyes. It made me pay attention. It humbled me.
Yes.
And now in fact, I just finished writing a book of short stories or short novellas about some of my experiences with that. Because I really want people to see that I think we. Well, being in touch with our humanity, you know,
yeah.
And that includes being in touch with our spiritual
yes.
That is a great story, though.
Oh, thanks, yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, it just was really a neat thing.
Uh-huh. And you were talking about humanity. Right now, there's a lot of magazines, media supports that are talking about this body-mind-spirit connection, and we hear it, we watch it, we have the TV on it, there's books about it, but how do you perceive this body-mind-spirit, like this body-slash-mind-slash-spirit connection? What does it really mean?
I think I became aware of that as a category or a way of thinking probably in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And I was working on a holistic health book it was one of the first books that kind of blended East and mm-hmm. Western medicine and the alternatives then. And I was working with an MD on this book. We were partners in writing this book. And we began to really tap into a lot of, get to know a lot of healers who were doing really miraculous work. And some of them were working with MDs. And there was the realization that, well, body, mind, and spirit are totally connected. I mean, now it seems like a cliche to even say it, but that many of the diseases, dis-eases that we suffer, are not just physical, and they don't just happen
mm-hmm.
serendipitously or something. There's establishing some kind of harmony between our bodies, our minds, and our spiritual selves. And when we begin to bring those together in an mm-hmm. integral way, which incidentally is a creative process in itself, we find health there. And it forces, when we were writing this book, it was called the Well Body Book. It was, it was a very popular book. It was published eventually in, I think, 6 or 7 languages.
Mm-hmm.
And interestingly, one of the things that really brought the book together for both of us was that we were working with we met and both got to know a Native American medicine man, and what he said is, you know, what's wrong with American medicine is that there's no integrating philosophy.
No.
It's a technology.
Mm.
And for there to be healing, there has to be an integral philosophy that brings it together. So you, and that's what we began to try to do in that book. And I guess we're kind of pioneers in trying to pull it together in a book. We certainly weren't pioneers in
very
that
cool.
position, but that position has been around for thousands of years. But
and we're going more and more towards that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had an interview the other day with a couple of doctors. They have a radio program on the East Coast, and one was a plastic surgeon, and which you think of as being this pretty mechanical thing,
mm-hmm.
but she was talking about psychic healing, which
oh.
she very much believes in, and mm-hmm. meditation,
oh, yeah.
and visualization, and bringing together body, mind, spirit as
oh.
part of the healing process, and had a lot of stories that... where in the clinic where they work, which was a holistic clinic back there, where they bring these things together and they see these miraculous healings of very serious cancers, for example. And,
mm-hmm.
So anyway, that's kind of a long-winded
no, well,
rambling
it's,
discussion. But.
Well, it's, I think it's really, you know, actually something that is, that we are all looking for, because I think that we all have intuitively woken up, and we are looking for our holistic ways to heal and grow and live and experience. And I think that that's the reason why there's more and more awareness, and that the media are actually putting those holistic medicines out there. And I think it's brilliant. Brilliant. And it's,
yeah.
You know, again, I think it was the right timing and people were ready. But I think we are going towards more and more of those techniques, definitely.
Yeah, I think so. And then, you know, and then again, there's this exaggeration of the symptoms, because there's,
yes.
There's also this technological medicine, which is really intimidating at times.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're caught up in it. My brother some years ago was in intensive care. He's okay now, but he was in intensive care for, 6 weeks or something, you know?
Oh, wow.
And I went to visit him, and it's like the whole technological medicine atmosphere is so
yes.
heavy, you know?
Yeah.
And you... It's almost like it's impossible to escape once you step into that
mm-hmm.
realm. It's very difficult.
But, you know, it, just take it from the birthing state. I mean,
yeah.
You know, I come from France, and where there's more, I believe that there's more people, more women giving birth in birthing centers and
oh, yeah.
with... Yeah, not with this technology, where here it seems, it appeared, and actually from my experiences, that a pregnant woman who is about to deliver is more considered as a sick person more
yeah.
than as a creative being ready to actually totally unfold,
yeah.
you know, a creating process. And
yeah.
I had a little hard time to at the beginning... with that, I have to tell you, it was.
It's very destructive.
Yes, it
you
is
know, it's
very, like you say, intimidated and destructive, definitely.
Yeah.
And it actually, I needed quite a bit of time to actually understand it, process it, and
yeah.
transmute it.
Yeah.
You know.
It's a real tough one.
Mm-hmm.
I had an interesting thing happen. My grandson, who's now 10 years old, my son and his wife talked this hospital into allowing them to use their delivery room and to be left alone unless there was an emergency.
Okay.
And so they had their doula.
Mm-hmm.
Spiritual teacher
mm-hmm.
and three generations of the family. I'm the grandfather. There was a great grandfather and a great grandmother, two grandfathers, and two grandfathers, two grandmothers,
mm-hmm.
and we were all there.
Yeah.
And my son delivered the baby.
Oh, beautiful.
And it was great, you know, and there was music playing.
Oh.
I always have felt like if a child was brought into the world in that way, like really welcomed and
yes.
celebrated.
Yes.
And then the question is not what we're going to make of him or her, but what does he bring us?
Correct.
And what is the mystery?
Yes.
And then bask in the mystery and just enjoy it. And
yeah.
So this little child came out and was passed around from hand to hand, and he's looking at all of us, and he's just got this look of awe on his face, and we were all just, you know, so happy, and there's music playing, and my My son is a professional photographer. He's taking pictures.
Oh, that's good.
And,
like a good grandfather.
It was wonderful. And he's the most confident kid. I mean,
yeah.
He's just right out there, you know.
Yeah.
And he sings in a boys' choir, San Francisco boys' choir, and he heard about it on television when he was about 6 years old, and he said, told his dad that he wanted to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so my son said, well, okay. So they had to go to this audition, and there was like 30 or 40 kids waiting to be auditioned, and they had to go up on this stage in a church. And they had to walk down the aisle up on the stage.
Mm-hmm.
And most of these kids, you know, were just terrified.
Yeah.
My grandson goes skipping down the aisle. He couldn't wait to get up. And the people who auditioned him said they had never in their lives seen anything like that. And I think it had a lot to do with the way he was brought into the world.
Of course. You know, it's one thing that really struck me when I gave birth to my first child, and that actually before, and you know, we're gonna call them conventional doctors, or and you know, it was really in the mindset at that time that when you delivered, then right away they would take the baby to weigh him and clean him and. And it was like, you have got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
That's not where it belongs. It doesn't belong on a scale right away.
No.
You know, it's okay. And that was one of the points that I personally made, that no, the child will be with me and he's going to stay with me. I mean, to me, it's even cruel, I think.
Yeah.
To actually do that. But
I remember seeing my son just take the baby and hold it for a moment, and then he turned it, and there was this moment when their eyes met, and it was like electric. And then he immediately put the baby on the mother's breast.
Yeah.
You know.
And I think, you know, it's really realizing from the time of birth, like the time of delivery, that this is a spiritual being with this fantastic and powerful energy that communicates through that energy from day one.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
So, you know, you cannot take away the fact that, oh, it's a baby, it doesn't know better, and we know better. And, you know, really this form of communication that I personally have truly experienced since I gave birth to two beautiful boys, I had a notion, I would say, of what that communication, this intuitive communication was, until I truly, and I've been experiencing it since their birth, it's just, we don't have to talk, we know.
Yeah.
You know, and that is a blessing.
Yeah, the miraculous thing to me, I mean, I was at my son's birth, and when I saw him, when he came out, I looked at him, and I thought, he's not at all what I expected, but I feel like I've known him forever.
Yes.
Yeah? It was such a strange experience, you know.
Definitely were.
And also the sense of what they bring into the world.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
They're not empty vehicles. They're not empty vessels.
Definitely not. That's for sure. They're precious. That's for sure. They are precious. So,
and that's such an important insight, I think, about the whole creative process too.
Oh my goodness!
Kind of
talk about it. Yeah.
You know, what is it that happens to the baby after it's born? You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That can either nurture that creativity.
Yeah.
The spiritual, or make it very difficult for the child to develop.
And it's interesting how you actually as a mother, I realized how I have on a daily basis, I have to be creative in ways of how to teach them, how
yeah.
to show them, and how to allow them to teach me too.
Yeah.
And that is really being creative.
Yeah, it's because they're all unique too, you know.
Totally.
You don't have anything. I mean, we have some experience to go on, but we've got to create.
Yes.
Be creative all the time, the parents.
Yes.
Good parents.
Yes. And I think it's the beauty of teaching as well. I mean, really, teaching is a blessing in terms of using your creative, your divine creative power. Because I think, you know, I always say, as long as you teach, you're learning. But this is truly one of the best experiences in expanding my creative side.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, every single human being is so unique that you have to come up, I have to come up with the best way for each of them individually, in their individuality and their sensitivity to, you know, to get to it.
Yeah.
And it cannot be twice, you know, two times the same message for two different ones. So it really is a creative power. It's not only, you know, experiencing ourselves being writers or painters or sculptors, but it really is a daily life, a daily basis
yeah.
life.
Yeah, it's like realizing that every moment is new, you know.
Yeah.
And that we have to, we don't have to, but life is so much more exciting when we can
exactly.
relate to each moment as if it really were
Definitely.
New and that we don't have these patent responses, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So life becomes very exciting at that
point. It is. So you teach weekend workshops and you have online classes to teach the entire world how to expand their greatness and their consciousness and their creative power. So where can our listeners find you and get a glimpse of your vision and wisdom?
Well, I do have a website, so
mm-hmm.
that's the way we get in touch with each other these days, I guess.
That's true.
The address there is...
It worked for us.
Yeah. The address there is www, and then it's my name, Hal, H-A-L, Zina, Z-I-N-A, Bennett, B-E-N-N-E-T-T, .com.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an 800 number, 1-800-738-6721.
Okay, so I don't know if we have the time to get someone on the air. I don't know if anyone has called. Do we hear anything?
I don't hear anybody.
I guess we talked a lot, that's for
yeah.
sure. It was very insightful, though. And so your workshop, one of your workshops is you coach people who want to write, right?
Yes, and yeah, I work with a lot of writers. Interestingly enough, I don't always think of my workshops as writing workshops because people usually get something else from
them. Oh, well.
I think, you know, getting in touch with their own creativity is a big deal. Well?
Okay. So, well, I guess it's the end of our segment here. It's the end of our hour. I cannot believe it's been already an hour. But I thank you very much, Hal.
Oh, thank you. It's
really fun. And again, if you want to find anything about Hal, then you can go back to this webpage, Conscious Fitness Divine Body on BBS Radio, and you can get his website and link to it and then hopefully create after that I would give you the the sparkle to do as much creativity as you can. Thank you so much, and have a good evening.
Oh, thank you.